CD 9.
You can always tell when something is coming to an end. You know, by the way events are shaping, that it can't last much longer. But you think there are still a few days or weeks to go, and that's the moment when it finishes with a sudden bang that you didn't expect. Come to think of it, that's probably true of life. Or so it strikes me at the age of 90. But I don't expect it to happen before tea. Yet, one of these days, the muffins will grow cold and the tea cakes congeal as they summon the lads from below stairs to cart the old cadaver up to the best bedroom. And, if I've a moment before the light fades, I'll be able to cry, "Sold! Starnberg and Ignatieff, and Iron Eyes, and Gulshar, and Charity Spring, and all the rest of you bastards who try to do for old Flashy, because he's going out on his own, and be damned to you." This cheery reflection is brought on by my memories of that Easter Sunday night, when I knew the curtain must soon come down on Magdala, perhaps in a day or two, and 'twas all over, receipted and filed before Monday sunset. It happened so quickly that I can remember only the vital moments. The hours between have faded. Mind you, a shell splinter in the leg is no help to leisurely observation. We'll come to that presently. But I'm clear enough about the almighty row that broke when Theodore summoned his chiefs and told them it was time to cut and run, that they must be off before dawn, making for Lake Tana, where Napier could never follow them. They shouted him down, swearing they could never assemble their families and goods in such short time, and demanding that he make peace. He cussed them for disloyal cowards, and they heaped reproaches on him. "If you had not released the captives, we could have made terms with the Ferengis," cries one. "And if they had refused, we could have cut the white dogs' throats and made the hearts of their countrymen smart. Aye, at least we could have been revenged. As it is, we have no choice but to make peace. We are your men to the end, but only if you make terms. If you will not, you are alone." He might have read the end of his rule in the scowls on their black faces, but he still couldn't bring himself to surrender. He told Damash to start dragging guns and mortars from Islam Ghee up the rocky track to Magdala, and then Gedda, the firebrand, thinking this meant a last stand, swore to stand by him. But the rest dispersed in sullen silence. And it was from that moment that the desertions began in earnest. Scores of warriors and their families left their posts on Selesi and Fala, and only a few hundred were prepared to help Damash move the guns, while Theodore struck his camp below Selesi. Then we must all retire across the Islam Ghee plain in the gathering dark, Flashy aboard a mule with his heart in his boots, for, like Engedda, I assume that his fickle majesty had changed his mind yet again, and was determined to fight it out. I was mistaken, but before I come to that, I must tell you how the land lay in the closing act of our Abyssinian drama. From the deserted village marketplace at the far end of the Islam Ghee plain, Magdala Rock rose 300 feet sheer, with only one way up, a narrow track that was really no more than a ledge running steeply up the cliff face. Near the top, it turned sharply to the right towards Magdala's first gate, the Kobet Bar, flanked by a high wall and stockade reinforced by thorn bushes. The gate was massive, with supporting towers and a sloping roof, like that of a lich gate. 50 yards behind it was a second gate, and beyond that lay the Magdala Plateau proper, with its little township of houses and churches, and the palace, big thatched buildings of typical Ab design. One thing was plain. Given a few decent guns, the Salvation Army could have held Magdala against anyone, Napier included, and if Theodore had got his cannon up to command that narrow track, there would have been no shifting him until his water ran out. But he didn't, thanks be, and once he and I and his immediate following had struggled up past the gun teams, sweating and blaspheming in the dark, and reached the Kobet Bar gate, he realized their task was hopeless, and there was nothing for it but flight or surrender. There must have been about 20 of us in the little guard tower flanking the gate, waiting breathless on the word of that haggard figure, standing with his head bowed in thought. I remember Engedda, grim-faced, and little tubby Damash, exhausted after his gun-dragging exertions, Hassani, the Magdala commander, Wald Gabre, the valet and gun-bearer, and others whose anxious black faces I can still see in the flickering torchlight, but whose names I never knew. At last, Theodore lifted his head, and the old balmy light.